If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What's up and welcome back to the Kinda Funny Games cast. Of course, I am Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Good day to you, Tim.
The big daddy himself, Greg Miller.
Hi, Tim.
I like your shirt.
Thank you very much.
Pretty cool.
I got it for This Is Awesome. They sent it to me and I was like, yeah, it's actually a great shirt. So I just kept wearing it.
I like it. And rounding out the group today, of course, it is IGN Cross Kinda Funny Extra Life Week. So we had to continue that fun train rolling. It's Kat Bailey.
Hi, Tim.
How you doing, Kat?
I didn't know we're clapping. The disrespect from Greg Miller. He doesn't clap at all.
I like your shirt too, Greg.
Thank you very much, Kat.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I've been playing way too many video games.
Haven't we all? That's kind of been the fun of all this. Real quick, actually, before I even get into the rigmarole and all this, I need to give a shout out because there's so many games to play right now. Of course, Mario Wonder's out, Alan Wake. We're going to talk about those two.
Woo!
We're going to talk about some other things. Thirsty Suitor.
Woo!
Really excited about that as well. But I needed to like pause everything to like just give an update to the world out there because while there's so much to play,
somehow there is more.
Somehow there is more. This weekend, Eli at RealSFTreat tweeted at me and was like, Tim, I think we found the follow-up to Amplitude that we've been waiting for. There's a game called Spin Rhythm XD that I have never heard of that came out on Switch last week. And just looking at the gameplay footage of it, I was like, something about this is right up my alley. So I downloaded it and I couldn't stop playing. I must have played this thing for like 6 hours this weekend. And that was like tearing myself away from all the other games to play. But it's essentially like I would say it's more DDR-like than anything, especially in presentation. You open it up, there's an over-the-top announcer. You hear the like the people cheering and all the stuff. It's very, very Konami, Bamani vibes. But I have not played a rhythm game that I'm like, oh, this is it. Like they did the damn thing that was original in so long, and this is definitely it. This is gonna be my new forever plane game. Like I'm gonna like just be playing this on the plane all the damn time. Anna Monoguchi's on the soundtrack. They got some tune bell. They got hyper potions. It is just. It's a banger. Everyone should check it out. And thank you so much for the recommendation there, Eli. I appreciate it. Did not expect a rhythm game win this weekend, but that was super fun.
You don't get enough of them anymore.
I really don't. I don't. You know what I mean? Now it always has to be, oh, it's a rhythm platformer. It's a rhythm RPG. Just give me a fucking rhythm game. You know, I just want to push buttons to the beat. Is that too much to ask?
I'm with you. Hi-Fi Rush sucks.
I fucking hate you, Greg Miller. I hate you so much. You know what I don't hate? Video games. There's so much things to love about them, and we talk about that every single week right here on the Kinda Funny Games cast. Of course, you can get it on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or roosterteeth.com as a video. If you want to get it as a podcast, search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games cast, and we will be right there for you. If you want to go above and beyond, you can go to patreon.com/kindafunny, just like our Patreon producers, Jedi Master Deadpool and Delaney Twining have done. We appreciate you so very, very much. Today, we're brought to you by BetterHelp, but I'll tell you all about that later. We got to talk about Alan Wake 2. We've been talking a lot about Alan Wake 2, but due to the review embargo when we actually got the game, we weren't able to give our full thoughts on Alan Wake 2 as it was coming out. Greg, you've now beaten Alan Wake 2.
I've beaten Alan Wake 2.
Kat, you've now started Alan Wake 2.
Just started Alan Wake 2. What an opening, huh?
What bless?
And I'm probably about halfway through Alan Wake 2.
Okay.
About 10 hours in.
Greg,
Tim,
I want to start with you.
No, I'll start with you,
yeah.
Timothy Getty. Mm-hmm. I dragged your ass to the TV on Thursday to show you, or Friday, a very specific point in the game. Did this motivate you at all to play it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. The way you guys have been talking about it's already been motivated. It's surely a time thing at this point.
Of course.
Like,
yeah.
I'm playing another game for review stuff right now, so I couldn't do that. Like, it's just hard. And then Spin Master XD came out.
It's
hard, okay? No, I'm very, very interested in it. I'm not fully sold because, like, I keep saying, like, I'm not into the super weird, artsy Twin Peaks type horror stuff.
Sure.
I like a little bit more cause and effect type shit. But hey, it looks amazing. And what you showed me was honestly incredible. And my favorite thing is while you were showing us, like, Greg pretty much slacked. Everyone was like, hey, if you don't think you're gonna play Alan Wake or like might want to see something to like sell you or not,
At 4 p.m., I'm going to, like, give a demo. And Greg straight up gave an E3 demo. Like, Greg sat there and, like, walked us through everything, set the stage. He's like, so, well, we're about to get here, blah, blah, blah. And then he shows us the thing.
I did it was slow pan point. And everything. I'm of telling course. You, ladies and gentlemen out there in the development community, if Kind of Funny goes away one day, hire me. I can sit there. I can do it. You know what I mean?
You can do it. I have full faith, but I loved it because it felt that way.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk about that. And then I saw you tweet over the weekend. You're like, I gave an E3 presentation. I'm like, you fucking did. It was awesome.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Alan Wake 2 looks incredible. So but now back to you then, Greg.
Yeah.
You've now beat this game.
Sure have.
Did you beat Alan Wake Remastered going into this?
No, remember we started it. I did a little bit more than half of it, and then review season caught up to us. You know, that window closed up pretty quick of when I had that week to play with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that you're done with Alan Wake 2, I'm just going to start here. Is this a Game of the Year contender?
Undoubtedly. I think so, yeah. I think even when we were on PS I Love You, right, and it was me, Janet, Paris, and no. But, yeah. Yeah, sorry. It's like, well, you weren't doing it originally, which is what threw me off. Even there, we were saying, you know, incomplete. I was like, I'm leaning 5 out of 5. I don't see what could really go wrong. Nothing did. Nothing dissuaded me from that, right? Paris already 5 out of 5. Janet was 4 out of 5. And we all even then were saying, yeah, this is in the running for Game of the Year. Having finished it, having seen everything else that there is in that game, still having more, you know, little mysteries to go off and do or whatever, yeah, I think this is easily on the short list for Game of the Year, which is crazy in a year that is this jam-packed with, oh, this should be on the Game of the Year list.
Are you planning on platinuming this one?
You know, I don't think so. And what's tentative about it is they've said they're bringing a new game plus to it. I might wait and see what that is, because when I beat it last night, then I went into, okay, let's go look at the Power Picks guide. Are there missable trophies? There are. And so one of the ones I'm short on are these collectibles for Alan. And it's like, oh, I haven't gone through and actually cross-referenced, but it looks like it's probably from an earlier mission that I can't like easily go back and replay. So it's one of those, how many other things like this are on the collectible list that I had to get in the moment? And so right now, obviously, I'm on to the next review. There's no chance for me to sit there and replay it right now. Maybe when New Game Plus does, it does. But
PlayStation Portal.
You know what I'm talking about? But this is one of my things, though. It's like, you know, I got that sexy new iPhone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the first thing I did was hit up Backbone and say, can I have a sexy new Backbone? Because this is USB-C now. And so my old Lightning Port one doesn't work. And sure enough, I got it, playing it. You know how much I love my Backbone. But when Jen was like, hey, come upstairs, you dweeb. I want to hang out with you, right? I was like, okay. And she was watching Grey's Anatomy, and I sat down and I went to start my PlayStation, and I was like, I refuse to play Alan Wake on this. Like, this isn't the way to play Alan Wake. So I just played more Diablo on it.
So that's actually a great segue to you. You were saying you just booted it up and your first impressions were, damn, this game is beautiful.
Yeah, I was kind of like you, Tim. I was like, I think I'm going to skip Alan Wake 2 because, full disclosure, I'm not a big survival horror fan. I've played Resident Evil 4, that kind of thing. I respect horror. But Alan Wake 2 didn't seem like my kind of game, and I'm not that familiar with the Remedyverse games. Mm. And I was going to ask you, Greg, how much knowledge do I need to have of like Control and Alan Wake 1 to really appreciate this game?
I don't think you need all that. I think it helps out quite a bit. Like, you know, in wrestling terms, I was popping for a lot of stuff where it would pop. Like, oh, that. Oh, okay. And like, you know, I forget who I was talking to today. Maybe Barrett. Roger, because Roger's super in on it too. And he's like, man, it makes me want to replay Control. And I'm like, dude, that's the thing. I'm not gonna immediately restart Alan Wake 2 and try to go for these collectibles. I'm gonna jump back to Control because like this is like such a great reminder of where Remedy's verse is right now, right? I think after such a big break between Alan Wake and then Control, to be there now and like, oh my god. But it's like, it gives you more context. It will remind stuff. But you can do what I think I did for Alan Wake 1, which was play a whole bunch of it, sure, but then like, okay, I've run out of time, read the Wikipedia. Okay, oh, that's how it ends? Okay, great, and then went bought. I think you could read a Wikipedia on both of them and probably jump in.
I will say GameSpot has a really good recap. Like, that's what I had to do this weekend, where like, as I got further into it, the way the game is formatted, right? Like, you have your missions where you're playing as Sagi Anderson, and then you have your missions where you start playing as Alan Wake, right? And they're both kind of doing their own separate narratives that are also part of the same narrative. And as I started getting further into the Alan Wake stuff, I had to stop and be like, I just have no idea what this is. Like, I don't know what he's doing here. I don't understand like what like the writing is doing to whatever's going on in this narrative. And to their credit, I think Sagi Anderson is supposed to be your gateway into this world, right? Like, if you are going into this with pretty much the same amount of knowledge as she is. And so going into it with that, it's like, okay, cool. I kind of understand being in the dark as her character. But as I was doing the Alan Wake stuff, and as I want to keep doing the Alan Wake stuff, because it's been fascinating to see, like, you know, Greg, you did most of the Saga stuff and then pushed into the Alan Wake stuff. I think Roger played it the same way as well. I want to do them where I'm like doing a chapter of each,
sure,
as I'm going, just to like get both sides of the story in conjunction. But as I was doing the Alan Wake stuff, I was like, oh, I really need context for this. And I did like the GameSpot YouTube video that's like Alan Wake story in 13 minutes. and listened to it, and I was like, oh, it makes perfect sense. Like, that lines up with everything that's going on right now. It's actually not as complicated as I thought. It is complicated, but like, once you listen to it, it's like, okay, it's simple. Like, this is what writing's doing. This is why he's here. All right, cool. Let's keep going.
I was thinking earlier this year, Alan Wake 2 didn't seem to have a lot of hype in the run-up to it. And so I thought, I wonder if this one's going to end up getting kind of lost in the mix. It reminds me a little bit of when Control came out. And I don't feel like that one got a ton of hype until suddenly, end of the year, everybody was like, I think this might be the best game of the year. I think IGN gave Game of the Year to Control that year. And maybe Alan Wake 2 is one of those dark horse kind of situations. Slow burn, word of mouth. I know that I ended up picking up Alan Wake 2 because the word of mouth was just that good. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that I really respect, including you, Greg,
thanks, Kat,
were like, yeah, this game's incredible, and it's maybe a Game of the Year contender. I was like, well, okay, I should play it then. And the first, I will say, 10, 15 minutes are extremely disturbing. There's a very large man, and you're very much seeing his back and a little more than that. And bad things happen to this poor man. I'm spoiler alert, but
like, that's the thing that got me in initially. Yeah. Is like, I did the preview for Kind of Funny, which is funny because like, I'm such not an Alan Wake person. Like, I was in the similar boat as you, where the only things that were bringing me into the idea of wanting to jump into Alan Wake 2 were hearing Greg talk about it at Summer Game Fest, and then like, you know, doing the preview. From both of those things, I was like, okay, yeah, this game seems cool. But me being not an Alan Wake person, you know, I'm starting up the game just to, like, see what it's about. And I did not have the plan to play through it, right? I just wanted to get a peek. And from the get-go, yeah, like, picking up that character and being like, oh, this is not starting where I thought I was going to start. And it being such a striking scene of what's going on, and then that setting up the mystery, and me immediately being like, oh, but I got to know what's up with this guy. Like, I think they give you the right questions early enough to where you're immediately invested in what's happening. And the thing I keep talking about is like, they keep giving me more questions to ask. And like, now I'm very fascinated about the answers. And now I'm far enough in the game where I have multiple theories about what's going on. And any of those theories could be accurate. Any of them could be like, you know, not even close to what's happening, but I really want to know, because I think they do a good job of putting you in a place where, in many narratives, I think it can be annoying to not have any frame of reference for, all right, but is any of this real or is all of this fake, right? Like, that's a thing that doesn't really attract me in a story, because I want to know like what the A to B to C plot points are, right? I want to be able to follow what's going on. I want to be able to be invested without all of it just upending and not actually being real. I think in this, it's everything. It's so weird to talk about this without like talking about the details, but enough of it is real enough. And even the parts that feel like, okay, maybe they aren't real, maybe they are real, they're set up in a way where that stuff really does matter, right? Like, if all of this is fake, it's to the narrative, right? If all of it is real, oh man, like, that's also to the narrative. I'm very fascinated about where things are going to end up here.
And that's also part of the whole mystery and the power of Cauldron Lake, right? Of like, making the fiction reality. And
yeah,
is that permanent, or is this, and where are we in it in terms of real or fake? And the way you go through the Looking Glass a few times on it, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about the Game of the Year, like, contender, all of that stuff, like, what do you think, Greg, are the things about this game that, like, really, really shine, that put it to that level?
It's funny, you know, when Kat was talking about, like, this seeming like a dark horse and a similar thing to Control, right? I think that's one of those things that works so much to its advantage, and I think that's why it's turning so many heads, is that it didn't have the hype, understandably so, of Zelda, right? It didn't have the hype of Starfield. It didn't have this, like, oh, it is. It's this Remedy audience that... you know, I don't think of myself as a Remedy fanboy or a long time, but I've been with them since Max Payne, right? I've played every Remedy game. Even Alan Wake, honestly, is the one that didn't work for me. Everything else I've rolled.
Quantum Break, you were.
I loved Quantum Break. Yeah, I loved it. I mean, like, not a 5 out of 5, but it was like, I had a great time with that game, right? And so, like, for it to be kind of this like situation where there's this like not quiet group, but I think Control really was the thing of like, oh shit, this is really weird and cool, and like, this is, it looks so good, and da da da. And then to get here and have this, I think for me it's visuals. I mean, you're gonna talk about that. I think it is performances, where even the ones that are like awkward performances are usually awkward on purpose. They're doing something with that. I think it's the unexpected nature of it, right? Because when you peel it all back and you get into the gameplay, it's survival horror. You're walking around with a gun in one hand and a flashlight in another, and a very forgiving dodge that I was cracking myself up in the final things of you, me, and Janet's conversation from PS I Love You, of just me constantly, like, you know, monsters just swiping at me, and I'm like, just got to get to the door. Just get, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like the gameplay is like, oh my God, it's so compelling, so crazy. It is like, the presentation. It is the story. It is the way they really do. You know, we talk so much about Spider-Man 2 and the way they use the, well, how they use PS5 for Alan Wake, how it uses current gen technology of, you know, like literally flicking a light switch and changing realities and the world changing around you. Like, that's all so impressive. And for me, it really was the unexpected. It really was, to Blessing's point, as Saga going through and getting these questions and answering them, and then as Alan being like, what the fuck is going to happen when I go through that door?
I think this is the year of next level presentation. I think Baldur's Gate 3 is another great example of a game that's just elevated by its performances and its animation and its writing. And maybe I was really taken in by just the trailers for Alan Wake 2. I'm like, what an interesting mix of live action and CG. One of the things that I really like about this game, just right off the bat, is the mind place. And I think so many games would have just done it as a menu. They were like, we can't devote this many resources to modeling this out and having it a fully interactive space. But Alan Wake 2 is like, yeah, screw it, let's go.
And the way they weave that into the story, then the way they make it, they explain it for what it is, and then the way in the end, there's a section where, like, you know, we talked in PS I Love You, me and Janice in particular, like, the mind place is cool, but the board, it really isn't doing much. We're laying out things we already know. It's a great way to catch up, but it's not like rarely are you getting real information from it to go use in the game. They do something at the very end with it in terms of where I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Like, and I won't say anything.
It ties into the story.
Yeah,
I know,
right? Yeah.
And to your point as well, Greg, like, I feel like this game, in terms of the gameplay, for me, might as well be a walking sim, right? Sure. Like, it's survival horror, right? It plays like you'd imagine for like a Resident Evil 4 type game or like a Dead Space or whatever. But it is so basic in its survival horror gameplay that if I was judging this game just by the gameplay, I'd be like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's cool. Like, it's not anything that's blowing my mind. I'm not even having like a super quote unquote fun time playing the game, but it is about the story and it is about the narrative and it is about, like, in the things that I like about a walking sim, right? Picking up all these different things and going, all right, how does this all come together? Yeah. Like, what are we building up to? What is the next twist? And yeah, like, I think to the mind place thing, right? Like, even playing it more over the weekend, as I've been like building things out and just like listening to Saga recap everything, I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. Like, I like everything that's happening here. And then on the flip side to Alan's thing, right? Like, the way they use Alan's writer's room to create puzzles and create these interesting scenarios, where the way it works is that, like, you know, Alan is in the dark place, which is this effed up distorted version of New York, and essentially, like, he can morph reality by going into his mind palace, which is the writer's room, and picking up new plot points and then, like, using a plot point to alter reality, like, to, like, change the scene. And so he might have a plot point that is, oh, these cultists came through and they did sacrifices. If you're in like a train station, right, you use that plot point, boom, all of a sudden it is like the cultists were here, and now all of a sudden you have different pathways you can go through, or like different areas open up, right? Or if it is, oh man, the detective lost their wallet or whatever, right? I'm just making shit up. You know, that then changes what the scene is. And I'm like, it's very fascinating how they chose to, like, use those bits in order to create, like, puzzles in a way that I've not seen in a video game before, right? Sure. Like, it feels like let's think about the way people navigate these areas in a way that makes me care about the areas more than I would even in a survival horror game, right? Like, I look at Resident Evil 4, like Last of Us or whatever, and oftentimes I'm going through these places once or maybe twice as I'm walking through. And Alan Wake, there's the subway area where I legit, like, was walking in circles because I would get a new plot point. I'd be like, what happens if I go back and use this plot point in an earlier spot? And now all of a sudden I am getting secrets. I'm getting these other tidbits of story that really fill out what's going on here.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Janet said on PS I Love You has been ringing in my ears, and I'm going to use it later in another review here, is frictionless, right? Where, like, the gameplay, sure, you could look past it or whatever, but it's the perfect conduit to get you into the world and story they're building and impress you with those kind of things and not have to impress you with combat. And it speaks back to what I was talking about when I was talking about Alan Wake Remastered, right? Is like, oh, I kind of had it wrong. Like, I didn't realize how plentiful ammo was and all this stuff. Like, I really am not worried at ever in Alan Wake of running out of resources. And I'm playing on normal, so if I went up to hard, and I know they're doing Nightmare and yada, yada, yada. But it is just a fun thing of shooting. And there are plenty of times I'm out of bullets, and then it's just the duck and weave, and I just run around.
I think this year has shown that you can have actually pretty straightforward gameplay foundations. Spider-Man 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Alan Wake 2. But if you can elevate that with just really spectacular presentation in the way that you integrate all of that together, and that can make otherwise fairly basic concepts work extremely well. You don't have to like overthink the actual interactions, yeah, right? Yeah. You just want to make sure that the people are having a great time in that individual universe.
Yeah.
Something I'm surprised about is how long this game seems to be, because I remember when you were playing through it a couple weeks ago, you were like, oh yeah, I'm like, I forget what it was, like 12 hours in or something, and you're just like, and I have so much more to go. For a survival horror game, I think that's pretty interesting, because those games are usually on the shorter side, and I'd say that the better ones tend to be on the shorter side, because there is that moment you become a little too powerful, and then it just goes off the rails.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's just like a horror movie, right? The moment you know the bad guy, the moment you understand the evil, it makes it a little less scary or a little different. Do you think that this game like overstays its welcome, or does it kind of like really pay off because it is so narrative focused?
I think it pays off because it's narrative focused. And I think, you know, it's important to say, when I was showing you or saying that, I think I was saying I was 11 or 12 hours in. That was based on the save clock. My save clock at the end last night when I started trophy hunting was like 16 hours, 30 minutes. So it's one of those things that,
oh, okay.
What I love about it, and I think I was talking to you right after I finished mainlining Saga stuff and then finally jumping to Alan. Alan's stuff being that nightmare world, being the what's real, what's fake thing, isn't afraid to give you shorter chapters. It's not afraid to give you chapters that are predominantly, if not all, live action video that you're watching. Like they play with a lot of different things in that nightmare world that makes it go a bit quicker at a pace there, where I was like, oh, this makes sense, because some of Saga's chapters, I was like, damn, it's a long chapter. Yeah. Where if I would have popped over to Alan Wake and had a palate cleanser.
Dude, that
and
coffee world chapter, like I was planning to go through this game doing 2 chapters a day.
Yeah.
So I can knock it out in hopefully, I don't know, maybe like a week or so.
Yeah.
And I did the coffee world chapter, and by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, it's been like 2 hours. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why is this happening? And then I did the next chapter, and the next chapter was really short. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, they play around with the lengths. But like, I think when you do get to those longer chapters, I think it pays off, right? Like the Coffee World one, for example, feels, and the Coffee World is also like in my preview that I did with like the Let's Play I did with Alan, with Sam Lake. I was gonna call him Alan Wake. But yeah, like that area is big, it's explorable, right? And like that's one where they build it out in a way where they want you to like re-explore it, and you're coming back to it multiple times, and you have an understanding of what this theme park is. And I think it works. Like, it also works just for like what the game is doing with changing the areas. Like, it's the same thing where you play any survival horror, and all right, you go down the path, you get the item that you're looking for, right? The crowbar, like the screwdriver or whatever. And then you come back the same path, and guess what? There's enemies, right? That's how every single survival horror game works. In this one, you do that, you come back, and it's something morphed, or something changed, or something weird's happening. So it's
no
like,
longer flooded.
It's no longer flooded, right? Like, there's something that's happened.
Every time Saga's like, oh, the flood's gone. I'm like, oh, well, here comes 30 minutes of me exploring every nook and
cranny. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that happened. I was like, I don't have the time. I'm just going to skip all this stuff, but... I really like how they're playing around with your expectations.
Greg, I have a question.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 4 Remake came out earlier this year, and a lot of people were lauding it as one of the best remakes ever and like real achievement in survival horror. Alan Wake 2 versus Resident Evil 4 Remake, what's the comparison to you?
I still haven't started Remake.
What?
I know. It came when I was on another review, so it's been burning a hole on my PlayStation. It's still there. I'm getting to it. I want to have it for Game of the Year discussions and this very conversation.
I feel like it's gotten a little bit lost in the mix because there's so many great games.
Wouldn't you say that goes back to expectations? Because I feel like that's why I've left it on the back burner. I've played Resident Evil 4 multiple times. You know what I mean? So it's like to go back to it, even though it's going to be way prettier and different, and I loved RE2, right? Like, I still feel like Resident Evil 4 has been out so much. I feel like that's been talked about so much in terms of just as an IP, let alone now as a remake. But I feel like, remake come out and they didn't fuck it up. Great. Like, that's kind of the conversation there, right?
Well, I've had plenty of people be like, look, even if you finish Resident Evil 4 multiple times, like our friend Brian Altano has said this, you should go back and play Resident Evil 4 Remake because it's just that much better, because developers understand the spirit of it.
Yeah.
But they also went in and improved it amazingly, dramatically. Yeah. I think it's just Alan Wake 2 and Resident Evil 4 have different goals, maybe.
Sure.
Like, y'all are talking about different chapters and everything, I feel like the cadence of reading a novel, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Resident Evil 4 is almost like a schlocky horror that you're watching at 3 a.m, but that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Really
Yeah, it's still on my to-do list. I'll get there.
What's funny is that I talked about this during our review on PS Love You, that like, it's been fun playing Resident Evil 4 Remake at the top of the year and now playing Alan Wake 2 towards the end of the year, and it feeling like a full circle moment of, oh man, Alan Wake 2 can, this game can happen because of Resident Evil 4 and what that set up back in the day, right? Like, this game set the tone for then Alan Wake 2 many, many years later to come through and take some of these ideas and take ideas from other things like Twin Peaks and all this stuff and really forward it in a way that feels like a crazy evolution of what this genre was. It's funny for me, like, I playing through Resident Evil 4 at the top of the year and, like, trying to compare to Alan Wake 2. For me, Alan Wake 2, it's kind of easy for me to go with Alan Wake 2, and I think that's more so for the idea of Resident Evil 4 Remake. If I played that without the context of Resident Evil 4 and I just played it as a video game, I'd be like, oh, this is a great video game. Like, this is a fantastic video game, right? But it's not one that I view as, like, one of the all-time GOATs. When I put it in the context of what that game was when it came out in, what, 2004 or something like that, right? Like, I can totally see the, like, how that comes through and how people go, oh, this is, like, one of the best things of all time, right?
And so he played Remake for the first time. He didn't play through.
Yeah, I didn't play. I never played all the way through 4 originally.
Yeah, the OG on GameCube was shocking. One of the best-looking games of the generation. It felt like a next-gen experience in the PS2 era.
On the GameCube.
On the GameCube.
Which is awesome. Any final words on Alan Wake 2 before we move on?
I think the only thing we haven't said in terms of lauding this game is how I think seamless it is to go from live action to game. Like, you know what I mean? Where it is, like, I think we've definitely seen FMVs in video games before.
Metal.
Hellblade.
Exactly. Quantum Break. And I obviously, as the years have gone by, we've gotten better and better at it. But this is the one where it's like, damn. Like, you know what I mean? The jump over there where I'm excited to watch, I'm excited to play, and I don't feel a difference when I'm really jumping into it.
When do we put Sam Lake on, like, the level of, like, the greats when we think of, like, the game directors? Because I feel like he's starting to cement that.
I mean, I would say probably this will be the first step, if not the thing that gets him there. This is, I don't mean to take away from what Control did, but I feel like in some ways Control made Remedy relevant to a large portion of the audience, and then this is kind of like their Witcher 3, where now it's like, if you, even if you're just a casual reader of IGN, you're there and you're like, oh my god, this thing
I've heard so much. Wow.
Like, in a weird way,
I hope they don't have a Cyberpunk launch.
I don't want this to come off as like an insult, especially like to Sam Lake, right? But like, it feels almost like what Sam Lake does with Alan Wake 2 is like a more successful version of what David Cage tries to do with his games, where it's like, hey, I'm going for something different. I'm going for art. I'm going to put myself in the game, right? I'm going to do all these different things. And, like, I could see myself playing Detroit Become Human and, like, seeing David Cage appear and being, like, eye-rolling, right? Being like, oh, my God, this guy, right? Whereas Sam Lake does it, and I'm like, yo, this is fucking cool, though.
But,
like,
I mean, that's the whole...
He's pulling it off.
And again, right, like, to the, you know, the tapestry he's woven over there, right, and what this entire team has, obviously. But for him in particular, as game director on this, like, yeah, you could look at it as hubris, putting yourself in the game, right? But... like, it speaks to so many of the themes of Alan Wake, the creator, doing all these different things, let alone to then be, you know, oh, it's Sam, who was, of course, the face of Max Payne. Like, there's so many things that are like, it's so meta and not a cringy, weird, it's like, oh, if you, because how many people are going to play this and have no idea that that's him, right? Like, it's the people who are listening to this podcast, right, who are going to know that, watch that, then get the theme, understand when they're sitting on the couch at the late night thing, oh, my God, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's incredible what they've done.
Oh, man. So exciting. We're going to continue to talk about more exciting games after a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Do you ever feel like your brain is getting in its own way? I can't even count the amount of nights I lose sleep just because I can't stop thinking and my brain just won't stop talking. It turns out one great way to make those racing thoughts go away is to talk through them. Therapy gives you a great place to do that so you can get out of your negative thought cycles and find some mental and emotional peace. And it can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. Some of my best friends use BetterHelp and love how helpful it can be for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. You can make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/kindoffunny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/kindoffunny. BetterHelp.com/kindoffunny.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, Leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Greggy, a little back-to-back action with you here. You're reviewing a game called Thirsty Suitors that looked super cool since the first time we saw this.
That's
a really Scott Pilgrim versus the World type story, at least, for this game.
Yeah. But Thirsty Suitors, ladies and gentlemen, is something that's been, since I think we first saw it, right? It's from Outer Loop Games, of course. They're the folks who brought you Falcon Age before. And you are playing a game as Jala, right? You are coming home. You are a South Asian woman. You are coming home after a bad breakup to a place in a hometown that you kind of left in disgrace and just at the drop of a hat, right? And as you see the footage here, you go back and you end up fighting your exes or whatever. We've known this whole thing going through. There's dad, of course, he's Sri Lankan, mom's Indian. There's all these awesome themes and representation and da-da-da-da. There's skateboarding. It sounds like a fever dream to describe. If you don't know this game, and you must have seen it, ladies and gentlemen, at this point in many of the conferences and things. But like, to talk about it being, it is, of course, a game where you skateboard, you cook, and then you do turn-based battles to fight your exes, right? Like, it kind of sounds ridiculous. It is gorgeous as you see it. It's got this definitive art style, right? It's got amazing performances in it. I really like the music. Like, it's one of those games that I really can't say enough nice things about. My clock on the PlayStation clock, which I'm never sure if it's actually accurate, says 8 hours right now for me. I have beaten it. I have rolled credits. I think it's a 4 out of 5. I think it's a great game. And what it's pulling back to Janet's use of frictionless. I think this is an interesting year for games for a million different reasons. But to play Thirsty Suitors and then go on to Alan Wake 2, right, and feel the same idea that these are two games that are wanting you to play them. And how do you want to play them? This is probably an interesting place to start a review of Thirsty Suitors. But the idea is that basically, no matter what you don't like in this game, you can change it and turn it off. You can figure out how to play it. They want you just to be able to go through and do that. And obviously that comes down to difficulty, right? But it's also like, cool, do you not like the skateboarding in the game? When you get into a story-based segment where you have to beat somebody or do a combo challenge, it can autoplay itself. Okay, cool. When you go into the cooking mini games, right? There's a lot of tapping and flicking sticks and, you know, holding. You don't want to do any of that. You can turn it from, you know, you can toggle it. You can turn it to tap. You can just turn it to auto do it. Like, we'll just do it for you. And I think that sounds like it in some ways could be a detriment to it. Of course, all this is optional. You can do whatever you want with it. I loved it because, to go back to being an obsessive remote player, like, it was that I was playing this game and I'm having a great time, and I do like the combat a lot, and I really love the cooking mini game. But when I went upstairs and I was watching something with Jen and just grinding on a few of the different battles, I did just turn it to it because maybe timing's off, or I want to have my attention on the screen. So I let it do the things where it's like going to do the cooking game for myself. As I went, I was like, this is a nice choice, and it also doesn't get in the way of me complimenting what I love about the game. Because what I love about the game is that you can sit here and be like, it's Scott Pilgrim, right? And as we remember from the Scott Pilgrim movie when we did Edgar Wright in review, right? Like, I don't vibe with Scott Pilgrim, especially the movie. The books I don't have as much a problem with, but in the movie, I just feel like he doesn't grow. I really feel like it's a lot of telling and not showing, right? Jala's whole thing here is that the exes aren't evil. She kind of is shitty. And it's her realization to that, and her changes, and her conversations, and you're making choices in this, and you're never going to make the choice of fuck you and da da da. It is really dealing with some shit here and working through the fact that Jala broke a whole bunch of people's hearts. She, you know, really screwed up her home life. She hasn't talked to her sister, I know, I forget how many months or whatever, and now her sister's getting married, and that's a whole thing to tackle, the disappointment of her parents. But what I love about this endearing and heartwarming story, right, is that I was having breakfast with Jen, and she was like, so what happened last night? And I was like, oh, well, you know, I helped this ex who then had the realization that, you know, and I had this realization. And then she talked to me about, like, you know, you don't get it. Like, you don't understand, when you came out, your family was all right and celebrated. Mine won't look at me on the street, blah, blah, blah. And then there's this conversation, slight spoilers here, of her father being like, well, yeah, you know, like, I only good about you because of what I went through before that. And I stopped the conversation. I'm like, by the way, this is happening in the most cheery, poppy cooking mini game as I do. Like they take all this real serious conversations and, like, I'm sure things you'd like to have with a lot of your family members, right? And put it into this really heartwarming package that I really enjoyed playing through and having fun. And, you know, it's like, I think there's moments where it's like, you know, obviously Outer Loop is an indie game studio, right? And so there are those things where it's like, okay, I'm going into another battle. They're not random. There's little gifts you can run into and just, or bears eventually to choose and play or whatever. But then like the guy shows up and it's the same text as before and we're having the same conversations and there's nothing in the thing that says skip text I've already read, right? So it's like click, click, click. Okay, beat the guy up, blah, blah. But even combat for this turn-based system, eventually you start, I mean, the one that, you know, caught headlines when it first debuted was her calling in her mom and her mom showing up like, you know, the size of Godzilla and smashing somebody. As you beat the X's, you get them on your side. So you have these super moves and they're really, I was like, oh, that's cool. Like what's the risk reward for using them? There is none. They're just there to really fuck shit up if you want and really keep the battles going faster if you want. Like if you want. And I was like, oh, okay. That, again, frictionless. It's a nice thing to do.
It's like a visual novel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have an RPG about podcasts or a podcast about RPGs. The other one.
Oh, is this the Blood
an RPG about podcasts. And so I think a lot about turn-based RPGs and whatnot, and yeah, it's a visual novel with turn-based mechanics kind of attached.
Yeah,
some fun QTE style mini games and everything, and I really dig it. I am gay, but so I really enjoy playing a game that's unabashedly queer.
Sure.
And specifically what you're talking about, the pain. Some people have a lot more pain than others, and maybe the resentment of like I had it so hard and you didn't have it very hard. And grappling with that, I think that was a very honest conversation and a lot of emotions going back and forth. Also, this game reminds me of Persona 5 in the actual presentation. I mean, you saw it in the trailer, how the exes were going into full-on, demon mode and everything and powering up. And it's one of the first things you do is you take a test to learn your thirst sona. Right, it was like Heartbreaker or The Star. I'm a
Bohemian.
Bohemian. And it's doing a little Q&A that kind of reminds me of classic games like Vampire the Masquerade, Bloodlines. Like, what would you do in this particular instance? What would you do in that particular instance? And it maybe is a little bit of a Rorschach test of like learning or personality test of learning who you are as well. I really enjoyed Ms. Marvel. Last year.
Yeah, we did too.
Which did such a wonderful job of depicting Pakistani family relationships and a lot of people I know who are South Asian really, really, really related to it.
Yeah.
And this gives me sort of similar vibes. And so I have been really enjoying it. I'm like 4 or 5 hours into it. I think I'm in like chapter 4 or sure. 5 at this point. And the flow and the vibes work really well for me. Also, there's a bear and you go skateboarding.
Sick.
It's a little Tony Hawk-ish.
Love this.
It's not like on that level, but it's just something nice to do to turn your brain off. I've been playing on Steam Deck.
Nice.
Runs pretty well on Steam Deck,
yeah.
I have to say. So yeah, I have it like at 60 FPS.
Oh, nice.
And just turn down the graphics a little bit and you're doing fine.
Okay.
How's the presentation overall? Because like as you talk about it, like this is a game that I've done a preview at Day of the Devs, I think, a while ago. And one of the things that struck me was, like, it seemed very chaotic from, like, a lot of the things going on screen at a time, right? And, like, I think this is me doing, like, this skateboarding minigame.
Sure.
But as you describe it, right, and as, like, we've been running up to it, you know, you guys mentioned Scott Pilgrim, you mentioned Persona 5, both things that I super love. Even as, like, you were describing it, it made me think of Polite Society, a movie that Tim recommended to me the other week. And like, it seems like a melding of all these things that I'm pretty sure all these things that I enjoy that makes me pretty sure that I would enjoy this. But for me, I think presentation was the one thing I was very curious about. Does it hold up? Does it look good?
Yeah, I think it looks great. Honestly, I think the presentation and the humor both really stand out. It's a little over the top. All the characters are doing backflips all over
Auntie
the place.
Auntie doing
and
the giant, like, you know what I mean? She runs a garage and she's like powerlifting dead dumbbells.
The summons are a delight. I just really enjoy them every time, especially when you use a taunt. So the way that the battle system works is you're trying to find taunts to, so like, I'm going to make them really mad, or I'm going to shock them, or I'm going to break their heart. And once you get them going, then you can use a special attack to do a ton of damage to them. And the special attacks have little QTEs that you're doing, but even though they can get repetitive, they don't feel that repetitive ultimately.
Yeah, because, I still enjoy them. Yeah.
Yeah, because they just have a flow and a vibe and they're just fun to look at in this game. So I think, yeah, the presentation absolutely holds up. See your presentation. everybody.
Yeah, you're the presentation.
One of the things I want to jump off of that I really appreciated is, you know, that, like, obviously I loved Persona 4. I loved Persona 3. Persona 5, I still haven't, like, finished and gone all the way through, but I don't know what my problem is. But
it's a long one.
That's probably my problem as always. But, like, one of my issues with a Persona was always, like, ah, shit, what are you weak to? Like, what should I be doing to do the go and check the thing and do the stuff? What I really appreciate about using the taunts to get somebody's weakness right, and because, you know, you do it and then they can't perform and then, like, they'll either hit themselves or hit you for, like, one damage rather than whatever it was going to be, was that you could listen to what the person was saying to you and, like, educatedly guess, like, oh, okay, like, I could impress you, or you're flirting with me so I can inflict thirst on you and then distract you with my feminine wiles, right? Like,
I'm in.
Yeah. Like, I thought that was cool. But to your point of presentation, like, I'm with you that when I started the game and I came back, I think, you know, after night one, I forget, maybe it was Baird or somebody was asking me how it was. And I was like, it's interesting. It feels very indie. And, like, what I was in my head referencing that talking about was that it kind of feels stilted at places where it is like, cool, you're leaving the house, load screen, do the thing. You know what I mean? Like, there is those, like, but I think once you, like, by night two, when I understood, oh, these three core mechanics, right? The cooking, the skating, and the fighting are what makes up the game. So it's like, once I had that idea of, like, that's what this game is, okay, it never stood out to me again.
That was the question I had, is there a core gameplay to this, or is it all kind of a different gameplay style for each chapter that you're doing?
No, what I just described is what it is, yeah.
Got it, okay. Yeah. So it's kind of, you're coming back to the skateboarding, you're coming back to the turn-based
and
stuff.
Yeah. You know, skateboarding challenges that you can do, but it's not a hugely important thing.
No, they're all optional, and I don't like them at all, and it sucks that the goddamn platinum's tied to them, Eka at Outer Loop, driving me crazy. I'm like, I'm gonna go platinum. I started doing the skateboard channel. I was like, oof, I don't like this. I'm out.
Yeah. Why didn't you like it? Just because you don't like that type of thing?
Yeah. Or? It's the try and try again thing. Yeah. Like, again, like, it's,
oh, I love
it's
that.
When I'm, and that's why it might work for you. And it's not even that big of a deal, right? But to Kat's point earlier, of like, it's not Tony Hawk, right? Of like, it is this simplified skating and easy enough to do it. But then when it's like, now I got a combo of a million or whatever, I'm like, what do you want me to do exactly? Like, I exhausted the thing. I was like, I don't know. I just didn't enjoy that part of it. The skating between, like, when you're in the open area, right? Like, when you go downtown and you need to go to the shop at the end of the thing, you're skating to it. You skate that entire time and you can do little tricks and get little, you know, refill your willpower, eat a candy bar you pass for health or whatever. That's all fine. But when it got into, like, now we want, there's like one where it's like, go, you're skating and, like, the rails are going around in they're like in the water. So it's like, you got to time it perfectly and going, and the last one's all out. And I was like, I just, this ain't my jam.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on it, either of you?
This game is vibes, but also I appreciate how, as I already said, unabashedly queer.
Yeah,
it is. It feels like a very authentic story, and the creators have said that this is a story from the heart, and you can definitely see it. So in that case, I very much resonated and connected with it, and I'm really excited to see how it ends.
Yeah, I think that's nails it, right? Like, you know, one of my favorite things of playing games is getting to be in someone else's shoes, whether it be a fictional whatever, but definitely for a life experience that I don't know, right? And so, like, the jealous story of, you know, trying to make amends with their exes, trying to make amends with their family, you know, the weight of being South Asian, and the, you know, her mother having more archaic traditions or whatever, and how she's rebelled from that, but how do they find middle ground, which again sounds so serious and is, but isn't, when they do the game and the cooking mini game and she's judging me the entire time and there's an approval meter.
It's hilarious. I love it.
It's really well done, and I do think it's something special. And again, I think the heart of it is what shines through, and you are like, okay, cool, I don't like the skating, but that's not like a big deal. That's not what it's about.
Yeah. Awesome. Everybody check out Thirsty Suitors. Moving on, I want to talk about Mario Wonder.
Wahoo.
We reviewed it a couple weeks back, but that was that weird situation where it was Nintendo, so we only got one code, and even then their embargoes that kind of limit a lot of the things that you can talk about because they're not trying to ruin anything, whatever, and they're really sensitive about stuff. It's now out, so we can say whatever we want. We've all been playing it to some extent. Bless, we've talked a little bit about this on Games Daily and stuff, but where are you at now with Mario Wonder?
I've completed the main campaign. I've not 100%ed things, right? Like, that's something I might go back and do, but I've rolled credits on
it. Might go back, or, like, you think you're going to go back?
It's just a time thing. In my ideal scenario, I'd love to go back and, yeah, see if I can 100% things. I'm also just not that big of a completionist when it comes to 100%ing things, but a Mario game, I would make that exception for. But also, one of the things that Mario requires of you to 100% things is, like, get the top of the flagpoles, which I know I missed like probably 25% of them as I was going through. And then also the three coins. And like, I feel like I could see myself being on a guides page online. And that's kind of where I draw the line on these things. But like, in my ideal world, I would love to, because I think this game is a delight. Like, I can't believe how Well, I can't believe how much this game reminded me of all the things I loved about Mario and why I love Mario, right? It's the idea of, man, like, is there such a charm and such a level of creativity and, no pun intended, wonder as I'm playing through this thing? I am very impressed by the fact that they have the Wonder Flowers on every single level of this thing, right? And as a reminder, right, that's the mechanic where you get the Wonder Flower and then the level changes and you have like a cool set piece moment, and that happens in every single level. And all of them are different for the most part. I guess there are some that like repeat certain elements, but they're all unique to that level. And I cannot believe how well they pulled that off. Like the fact that I did not know what was going to happen level to level. Like, that's a feeling I've not had in a Mario game, and I guess in a 2D Mario game in a while. You know, I kind of understand what people are saying when they compare this even more to a 3D Mario than a 2D Mario, just in the sense of, hey, like, anything can happen. Like, you don't know what's around the corner. It isn't just you going through a roster of levels. So that stuff I love. I love the soundtrack. I love the music. I love the presentation. The art style changes for me have worked. After completing it, I also get where Tim comes from with some of the critiques of it still feeling like a new Super Mario Brothers extension, right? Like, this doesn't feel necessarily like this is going to stand alone as its own thing, especially like if they make a Mario Wonder 2, right? Like, this would really feel like a, you know, part of the, I guess, the new Super Mario Brothers franchise. But as a next step into what Mario can be and probably should be, I really like this direction. And yeah, like, I've had an absolutely wonderful time with it.
Have you played two, Kat?
Well, this is where I go and plug our conversation about a Nintendo voice chat. Go check it out. Talked with a reviewer, Ryan McCaffrey, about Mario Wonder. Continuing on the year of vibes tip, this is very much a vibes Mario, where I think the badges are really interesting. And each time I get a new one, I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, they're the ones that are sort of simple. It's like, you just get a mushroom to start your level. Cool. I like that. But there are other ones with the dolphin kick or being able to squat and then jump much higher, which has actually that's the one that I've been using the most recently because it's really helpful to be able to get to higher areas. And I agree that the Wonder Flower stuff is the secret to this game because each one is joyful. It reminds me of in Mario Odyssey when it's playing Jump Up Superstar and you're doing the Donkey Kong stuff. Mm-hmm. They had so much fun and it felt like such a celebration of Mario that they decided to basically craft an entire game around that conceit. And each one really is different. And there are fireworks everywhere and stars flying down and never know what you're going to get.
The fact that the second level, I'm not going to say what it is, but like, the fact that they were able to pull that off for what the second level is and like have such a strong start to it and go, hey, this is what you're in for the rest of the game.
Prepare for this a lot.
Incredible way to start it off.
You got to love when enemies suddenly start flying or they get humongous.
Yeah.
And you're just bouncing off them and everything. It's really great. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you beat it yet?
I'm on World 4 now. Awesome. And it keeps getting progressively better, I think. It's like a game that starts off fairly simple and you go, well, this feels very straightforward. And then they just keep getting more and more ambitious with the actual mechanics. From a platforming standpoint, there's some pretty challenging levels, but there's been nothing that's really super stood out to me so far. It's mostly just the design. Like, I don't think the level design is that special, but I do think that the actual Wonder Flowers are really interesting.
Greg, I want to talk to you about this because I know you haven't played too much of it, but you and Ben have been playing, which I think is extremely exciting. Like, what is your thoughts and what are his thoughts?
So that's a great one. Let's get Ben on the phone. I was home on launch day working from home because the nanny was out, and you had said ahead of time after you reviewed it, you're like, yo, Ben would really like this. So, you know, when I got it all downloaded and we were getting ready to go meet mom for lunch, we took 20 or 30 minutes and went down there and put it on the big screen today, and he just sat there enraptured by it. And I sent you the video, right? But it is that thing of like, when we finally get, this is his first Mario game, I mean, he's 2 years old, right? So like, we got to the end there and I'm like, you know, do you like Mario? And he's like, Mario. And he started saying Mario. I'm like, can you say wahoo? And he's like, wahoo. And like, we're doing the thing. I was like, oh my god, this is great. God. And so that's one of the, I think, reasons I haven't advanced more, is that we did that on launch day or whatever, and I haven't been back to it. Granted, Alan Wake had come in, and this, you know, there's four of the reviews I've been on since then, including Thirsty Suitors, right? But it is that I want to keep playing with him vibe of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been progressing a lot in it, and I'm at the point now that I've 100%ed every single thing except for the final last level. Mm. And, oh my god, and traditional Mario fashion in at least recent times, it's a doozy. Yeah. This last one, I spent literally an hour playing yesterday. I lost 50 lives. Oh, and I was like, oh, man.
It's funny because like that was going to be one of the things I brought up of like, man, I wish you talk about the badges. I wish they pushed you to like use the badges more in more unique scenarios. And you were talking about some of the levels later on. I'm like, oh, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, That's exactly where I need to get to. Because there's one badge I really like where you basically shoot out a vine like a Spider-Man web. As soon as I got it, I was like, this is fucking genius. And then I couldn't really find much use for it in the levels that I was playing. Like, I found some use for it, but like, I wish there was a level that was just framed all around that where I can kind of go crazy with it. That's the thing is, I feel like there, if I had one gripe, and it's even a weird gripe because to the game's credit, there are so many creative ideas in Mario Wonder that I wish we could like pick and choose a few and really develop them and let them breathe. Because it does feel like moment to moment, there's something wondrous and new and crazy that happens. And then you're on to the next one, right? It feels like for like a year straight, every day Nintendo had game jams where we're like, all right, what are your ideas? All right, let's make this level. And it's super polished and it's super cool and it's super creative. But I think that then, yeah, like let some mechanics feel like they fall by the wayside when it is, no, you should use this more. Like this should come back around more. That's one of the things I wish I could see. And I don't know if that's making the game longer. I don't know if that's making, again, a Mario Wonder 2 that is. All right, now let's do that. But it makes me want to get to where you're at, Tim, with like the challenge stuff to like really try to push the difficulty of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving my time with this game. Like it's definitely in my top 10. Like it's a contender. For me.
Rest in peace, Andy.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. But now that I've done the majority, like literally I was about to beat the level and I died right before the flagpole. So it's like, I hate this, but I'll be back and I will do it. But now that I've seen all that the game has to offer, I really stand by my review of a 4 out of 5 on this one, where I think, and that's a 4 out of 5 for Mario, for 2D Mario, for what we expect. Cause there's so much great here, so much that's so special, so much that I love. And I do think that, for again, like I said in my review, to a lot of people, this is going to be a 5, and it should be a 5 because it's such a special experience. But for someone that's been there, done that every single time with Mario, I'm with you with a lot of what you're saying of just like, oh man, that idea was great. I would have loved to go a little further with that instead of just more different things. Like there's just so much that I don't think everything like totally hits. And we were talking about the level design, and like I brought this up,
it's very bite-sized in some ways,
which can be good. You know, Mario 3 is my favorite of the 2D Mario games.
I actually think Mario 3 is more expansive, at least so far, but to me. But one thing that stands out to me is the power-ups are actually not that complex. You have Bubble Mario and you have Elephant Mario and Fire Mario. Maybe there are more that I'm forgetting about.
Not real,
and that's about it.
But the badges are much more about that. And I think it's interesting, some of the badges could have been power-ups, honestly, like the dolphin kick. Just turn Mario into a dolphin, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like Frog Suit in 3. Like those are things where some of the decisions I don't feel like fully add up, but I also totally get it. And I think that like the content that's here is amazing. And I think that that's just the biggest hesitation I have, is that there was so much amazing here and it comes together so well. I just feel like there is a lot of room for like that. Let's take this from that 8 to a 10 that I just feel like it doesn't quite hit there as much as I wished that it would. And you bringing up the Jump Up Superstar thing, I brought that up in my review as well. And I feel like there aren't moments in this game that hit that high. They emulate it and they do such a good job of like having so many more of them, but I just feel like there wasn't a single Wonderflower thing in this game that I'm like, holy shit. You bring up the second level. I feel like that is definitely one of the highest moments for me in terms of like the wonder and surprise of it all. But I've seen things like that done in Rayman games. You know what I mean? I've seen some of the more interesting visual levels. I've seen that done in Donkey Kong Country Returns or whatever. So again, I'm coming at this from somebody that like maybe cares a little too much about all this, because I really, really love this game.
It's a lot better than New Super Mario Brothers. Sorry to New Super Mario Brothers fans. When I revealed Wonder, I was like, well, I hope it's better. And I think the Wonderflower conceit and the badges definitely make it a cut above. And it's just more fun. It's more visually interesting.
And part of it, too, for me, I think, to what I was talking about before with like developing ideas and all these things, right? Like, I think part of it is me coming at it as an adult playing a Mario game, right? As opposed to like being a kid. And like, you know, the fact that when I think about the TLC of this game and like the amount of work and the amount of like creative care put into it, the amount of enemies that I find where you're only here for this level, like, this group of enemies was made specifically for this specific level, and they're here, and they're never here again, right? Like, that's a lot of work to make so many of those moments happen. Same with the Wonder Seeds, same with, like, you know, a lot of the level design. I agree in terms of, like, you know, this, the level design itself is, like, what you'd expect, even out of, like, maybe a new Super Mario Brothers, but it is the Wonder Seeds and all that stuff that's elevating it. The amount of stuff in here is absolutely insane, but for me, I come into it, and I'm able to, like, kind of identify that it's more of a roller coaster ride than a, I'm gonna, like, you know, put in the effort to, like, get better or get good or have that, like, experience that grinds against what you're doing, right? And, like, you know, have that, I'm gonna put an effort into getting good at this kind of thing. Yeah, I think my ideal Mario game might be Mario Maker in some extent, because I can go and find those intricately designed, like, tough levels to go through and have that level of progression. But yeah, I feel like Mario Wonder is more of that, hey, like, this is a ride, this is about the experience, and this is about giving you this roller coaster of things to then get you to the end and say you had a good time.
Yeah, theme park ride is a theme good park, comparison, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Two major pros I want to give the game now that I'm a lot deeper into it in terms of, like, the post-game stuff. I do think that 100% in this game is worth it, and it's a lot of fun. And, like, getting all the purple coins and stuff, that is where I think the level design starts to shine a little bit more, is the way that they place those and the way that they teach you to think about how to find the secrets to lead to them, or the levels that have a second Wonder Seed. Like, that stuff, I think, is really rewarding and very clever. And the multiplayer, I just think, is inspired. Like, I love how they did it in this game. Like, when you go online and you're playing, like, levels with live ghost players, they're not ghosts. It's like they're transparent so that you can actually interact with them. But there's was a couple times where I was playing through, and as you boot up the level live, people can join in with you, and you're seeing them run behind you and stuff. And there'll be people that are, like, so they've already beat the level, they already know what they're doing, and they're kind of, like, trying to help guide players to, like, find secrets and stuff. And it's just so cool, and it reminds me of Journey, but it's Mario. And it's like such a cool thing that I don't know if this is a feature that's going to be able to work in 5-10 years when people are playing this game, because it just won't be there. But it is something that I never thought I'd want in a Mario game. In a lot of ways, it's a kind of antithetical to how I want to play these games. But there's something that is so charming about it, and that just really works. And it makes it feel like this community moment that, like, I think is something that I never expected to get from a 2D Mario game. So shout out to them for that.
It's like a live version of the Miiverse in some ways.
Honestly, it is. Like, with the little, like, the notes and the drawings people can make. And, like,
R.I.P.
Yeah, exactly. R.I.P. Miiverse, everybody.
Never forget.
closing out the show here, Starfield.
Wow.
Yeah, you've been playing a lot of Starfield. You're a big RPG person. We haven't talked about Starfield for a while, it feels on this show. What'd you think into the game?
I have a complicated relationship with Starfield.
I saw the tweets.
For context, Starfield was my most anticipated game of 2023. It is such a cat game where I get to be in a spaceship and fly around and have my own crew, and it's a Bethesda RPG. I really love Bethesda RPGs, actually. I loved Fallout 4. I love Skyrim. So this felt like perfection to me.
Yeah.
And it was hard to get into because it was missing one thing that I really, really, really love in a Bethesda RPG, which is the sense of walking out of the vault and or the castle and looking out, seeing the world spreading out in front of you and just be like walking along, right? And who am I going to meet? Who am I going to discover? That kind of thing. And it feels like a very expansive but also connected world, even if you're fast traveling. And because Starfield is necessarily so much fast travel, initially it was not hitting, and I am waiting to find the fun because the shooting is not good in this game, and the quest lines feel kind of underdeveloped, and I don't know how I feel about all of this. And finally, once I built my damn ship, once I went and I played with spaceship Legos, and I came in, I was like, okay, I get it now. I found it. Also, if you're not vibing with Starfield, A, go get mods. If you're on PC, go get mods. I would highly recommend the one that doesn't have the people zoom in with the conversations.
Oh, man.
That's a good one.
I'm so tired of that mechanic.
I would play it with Special K because the HDR is very lacking in the base version, and it looks 100% better with that and the DLSS mod. And then, God, what was another one? Oh, the inventory mod. That was another one. And also the mod that makes the UI go 120 FPS instead of 30. Mm. So it's not jittering everywhere and driving you crazy. Once I had all of that.
Once I completely rebuilt the game.
Once I redid the game, I started getting into it. And then also, I waited a little too long to get into the Vanguard missions. Ah. Those are the ones that have had the most TLC. They're really good, actually. And they go quite deep, and it's actually two major quest lines, and they're quite ambitious. There's one in particular that's basically Alien, complete with the ticking radar and everything. Very cool. I thought that was extremely well done. Sometimes this game gets too ambitious for its own good. And then I'm actually digging the main story. I like Star Trek. I'm a Star Trek fan, and it's obvious that the writers of this game like Star Trek as well, because they spend a lot of time thinking about the nature of the universe and thinking about the nature of religion and being philosophical. There's a memorial scene where everybody kind of gets up and is talking and being like very thoughtful about, you know, what happens after we die. I like the major choices that are being made at the end. I like some of the sci-fi twists. As a sci-fi nerd, I'm like, okay, I'm digging this. It's clear that these people really like sci-fi. And also, I like my ship now. I did stay up until 4 in the morning tinkering with it.
Awesome. So now...
Ship? What is the ship's name?
I didn't name the ship because they didn't know until recently that you could do that because they hit it.
Oh, you know it's buried in that weird menu?
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
So now that you have this moment that you're like, okay, I get it, and I'm in.
I got it.
Are you all in, or you're like, okay, cool, I'm finding the fun, but like, it's still not living up to
it.
It
went from disappointment of the year to at least it's in my top 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm digging it now. I'm good. I think that when modders really get their dig into it, so when they get the actual modding tools, I think they're going to create something really special because the pieces are there. I'm pretty interested in it, but it feels like it needs to go to another level. I'm also excited to see, I think Bethesda said there would be some expansions for this one. I want them. I want those expansions because I want more pieces for my ship. I want more quests. I want more mechanics. I want more things to do in this universe because
what's that local map?
One of the things that this game is really missing is the exploration. Going to planets is boring. It's not exciting to walk around on a planet and do things. Usually it's like, go kill a pirate base. Go invade the random research. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to. At a certain point, I realized that you're just going to be a lot happier if you do the bespoke quests and don't try to make reactive stuff happen. And one of the things that maybe Baldur's Gate 3 has over this game is how much more reactive it feels than this one. This one feels pretty clunky at times. But yeah, like it took a while. There's not a lot of games like this. I wish there were more spaceship games where I was exploring the galaxy in a AAA context. Todd Howard made the game he's always wanted to make. I respect that. And it's a game I've always wanted. And it's taken a while, but I finally like Starfield.
Yay!
I love that. That's a great way to end this episode of the Kind of Funny Games Cast, everybody. Kat, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
Hi, I have a podcast. It's called Acts of the Blood God. It's about role-playing games. It's independent. Also, I work over at IGN.com, where I'm the news director, and we're putting out news all the time. News, news, news. And I'm on Nintendo Voice Chat, which is our dedicated Nintendo show. So go check me out on that every single Thursday.
And
Tim, aren't you on that today?
I will be joining you this Thursday on that show.
Can't wait to have you.
Very, very excited to talk more about, I imagine, Mario Wonder and other fun things going on in the world of Nintendo. But until then, remember, stay tuned here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, all the different Kind of Funny Games channels, because we're going to be doing a whole bunch of fun IGN Kind of Funny crossovers this week on all the different shows, ending in Friday being a giant mega stream all day long. We're going to be hanging out in the studio with a ton of IGN people in the studio. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But until next time, I love you all. Goodbye.